Great. Okay. We're continuing in our sermon series. Remember what we've been saying. We've been talking about this sermon series is called Jesus, St. John's, and You. That's the overall theme that we've taken as our sermon series this term. And basically, remember what we've been saying. It's impossible to be a Christian, to believe in Jesus and not belong to the church. I guess that would come as a surprise to 90% of Knutsford. If you went around Knutsford saying to people, are you a Christian? They'd probably say, yes, we're a Christian. Some would say, no, there's something else. But on the whole, people would say they're Christian. But the relationship to Jesus' church is very, very tenuous. So there's something clearly wrong there. If Jesus died for the church, these people are Christians, but they never darken the door of a church. There's a synapse that's missing. There's something that should be happening that isn't. So sometimes people claim they're Christians, but have nothing to do with the church. Other people have a lot to do with the church, but aren't Christians. Now, this may come as a surprise to some people. I remember when I was a curate at St. Thomas's Oakwood, I got a conversation with a parishioner who came to church often. In fact, from what I was told, he was a generous giver to the church. He said, oh, but Najee, you know, I say the creed, you don't believe all that stuff, do you? I say, what? Well, you know, God, the creator, I believe in God, creator of heaven and earth, really? I said, why'd you stand in church and say it every week? Well, it's just ritual. It's what I do. I come to church. I've been going to church all my life. So I just come to church, but I don't believe all that stuff. Now, that chap, you can see, is in grave spiritual danger. He's in an unhealthy spiritual condition. Just as unhealthy as those who say they're Christians but don't go to church. So this whole series we've been saying, listen, if you're a real Christian, you've got to test yourself. You've got to have trust in Jesus, that he's forgiven your sins, that he's paid your debt, that you've got eternal life. So you've got real faith in Jesus Christ, and you've got a relationship with his church. Those two things go together. Now, that's what I've been saying, and sometimes somebody may say to me, well, what's the test? Give me a test, Nigel, so I know. Okay, I'll give you a test. I wasn't going to talk about money, but this deficit, you know, it's not going to be covered. So I changed the sermon series just to include money in this run of sermons. What's the test that I believe in Jesus and I've got a relationship with this church? It's very, very simple. Go look at your bank account. Go look at it. Add it all up. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Just go back home. Analyze your monthly spending and see how much you give away to the gospel things, to the church. It's hard, isn't it? Luther said that's a blow that really strikes home. It is. Go look at your spending. See what you give. Now, as I say, we weren't planning in the sermon series to talk about giving, but fortuitously it's come up, which is good, because I think perhaps I should have included giving in this sermon series. But before I unpack the teaching, I just want to say one or two things about the situation we're facing at the moment. First of all, as you've heard, we've got this deficit. Now, I don't think we talk about finances very much during the year. Now, you might disagree with me. You might think, Nigel, you're talking about it all the time. I don't think so. I think we talk about finances at the APCM and that's about it. But you may say, oh, no, you talked about finance. You may be able to pick through. You may remember every time I mention money. It's like, I think Caroline talks about my weight all the time. She doesn't, but I think she does. Why? Because I'm very sensitive about it. Be warned. So, you know, I don't think we talk about money that often. I think we talk about the APCM, and then, you know, last year Paul highlighted the fact that we'd be facing a deficit. Apart from that, I don't think we talk about money. Hardly ever. And perhaps we should. Perhaps we just get lazy when we stop thinking about it. And perhaps we should have in our notice sheet at the end of every week, we have so the income and expenditure and where there's the gap. Perhaps you should do that every week. I don't know. You let me know. That's just a thought. Secondly, just as a preliminary remark, it seems odd to me that a church like St. John's is falling into the habit of needing a regular gift day every year. That just feels weird to me. We're very good, aren't we, about raising money like that for big projects. I remember when I first arrived, we needed a youth minister's house. The money was there. I remember another occasion, we needed a big expenditure on the organ, perfectly justified. We need to spend the money. The money was there. With this reordering, I know it's been a struggle, but pretty much the money was there. When we've got big projects, the money's there. It's the regular day-to-day giving. I mean, why? Why is that? Well, I'm trying to think. It's not sexy, is it? Bills. Expenses. I mean, you can't see anything for it. When you're giving to a big project, we're going to be moving into a marvelous church. You can see what your money's bought. Well, it's just regular bills. It's not so exciting. So I think probably that's why people don't give for the regular maintenance of the ministry of the church. Thirdly, I just want to say one other thing, and I'm not sure whether I should say this because it kind of militates against what I'm trying to put across. Last time we had a gift day, it was great because a few people, I don't know who they are, Paul will know, and other two people, and perhaps Tony Billingham. One or two people come forward, huge gifts, 20,000, 10,000, you know, 5,000. There it is. Deficit covered. We all go, great. And I've got a sneaky suspicion. I mean, forgive me for being cynical. Perhaps I shouldn't, as a priest, be cynical. But, you know. I sometimes get the feeling that people say, okay, there's this gap that needs to be filled. I'm just going to hold back a bit and see who else is going to step forward. Oops, it's been filled. Oh, I don't need to give now. Cheeky. Very naughty. Go to the back of the class. Don't do that. In fact, those who might be tempted to step forward with one big gift to cover the donation, do I want to say don't? No, I don't want to say don't. I kind of do. I kind of want to say don't because that will force everybody else to step into the gap. But what I want us all to do is, as Paul said, just go, look, you know, can you up it 10%? And if you give £100 a month, can you give 110? If you give 20, can you give 22? Just go look at it. And see, again, as Paul said very importantly, see if, have you increased your giving over the past 5 years? I mean, I'm not blaming you. I do the same. You get direct debit, standing orders, and it's just going out your account. And you don't stop to think about it. Meanwhile, expenditure, of course, is rising all the time. But our giving doesn't. So sometimes we need a bit of a shock to, spur us into giving a bit more generously. But I don't want to, what I'm basically saying, I think, is I don't want to be here next year having this little pep talk again. Okay. I don't think we should, really, St. John's. If we were for St. Peter's Rock Ferry, okay. I mean, there's only two people in that congregation who have a job. And that's minimum wage. So, you know, they really do struggle. But I don't think a church like us should really be in this position. Let's now go turn to the teaching. What we're looking at, Paul, in this passage in Ephesians, is setting out how Christians should behave. And he's been spending a few chapters already setting out Christian doctrine. So the first half of the epistle is all this Christian doctrine out of truth. He said, being setting forward Christian truth. And now he comes to the way we should live, given the fact that those truths are true, if you see what I mean. Look how he begins. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. Now notice what the connection there is. Paul is saying, look at the Gentile world. Look at how they live. They live, they walk. That's their pattern of life. Their walk through this world is a pattern that's based on the way they think. Okay, obvious. What you think in your deepest heart, what you think deep, deep down, will manifest itself in the way you walk, in the way you live your life. What you believe inwardly will be manifested outwardly. And that's why Paul, when he's going through this passage, I mean, I can't think of an area of life that he doesn't touch. He talks about speaking. He said, when you speak, speak the truth. Why? Why should I speak the truth? If you're, by the way, if you're a Muslim, you don't have to. In Christianity, you have to speak the truth. Why? Because God is true. God is truth. Therefore, if you believe in God, I believe in God, the creator of heaven and earth. He's a God of truth. Therefore, if you believe in him in your heart, you have to speak outwardly the truth. Simple. Then he goes on to speak about stealing. And he goes on to speak about work. And he goes on to speak about giving. And he goes on to speak about being holy, being renewed in our minds. And so there are all these areas of life that Paul says must spring out of how we think about God. Now, we're going to be talking about generosity. Why should we be generous? Because God is generous. You say you believe in God. God is generous. You be generous. I don't know if you heard that interview last week with Roy Hattersley, the deputy leader of the Labour Party, I think, throughout the 80s, was it? And he was obviously a very compassionate man, very intelligent man, talking about all the piece of legislation he wanted to get through. And he was talking about his political career and how some things he got through and other things he failed to get through. But he said, my overall aim was to make this country a more compassionate society. Great. I mean, who can disagree with that? We all want that. My aim was to make Britain more compassionate. How is he going to do that? By legislation. Really? Really? Is that going to make people more compassionate just because you impose a law on them? Where's this inner change of the heart? Well, of course, in Roy Hattersley's imagination, there is no such thing as the inner change of the heart. He thinks he can make people generous by just putting the law on them. Be generous. Doesn't work like that. You've got to have this inward change of the heart. And so that's what Paul's driving at walking in a way that's compatible with the way that you think inwardly. Now, what 2 points is Paul making? Well, he's making lots of points in this passage, but I'm going to draw out two. The first is, he says, is do not steal. And then he says, give. Do not steal and give. Let's take point one first. Do not steal. Now, this is amazing. Paul is writing this epistle to Christians. To Christians. This letter is addressed to the church in Ephesus. In fact, this letter probably did the round of churches. Probably went to Ephesus, Galatia, Cappadocia, Bithynia. Probably went round all the churches. And this letter was written to all Christians. And it's amazing to me that Paul has to write to Christians. He just assumes that we're all stealing. Now, I thought, oh, come on, Paul, that's a bit harsh, isn't it? It's a bit harsh. I mean, he's writing to pagans who are walking the futility of their thinking. Yes, I can understand saying to them, now don't steal. But he's writing to Christians. He's writing to you, he's writing to me. And he says, guys, anyone who's stealing, there are probably some of you out there, don't do it anymore. Let him who steals no longer. Now, how is it, do you think, that Christians can lapse into stealing? Let me put it like this. We live in this world, don't we? We live in the world. And as we live in the world, we're rubbing along against our non-Christian friends, and we're listening to non-Christian TV programs, and we're listening to non-Christian radio. And all, as we're just walking through this world, talking to our non-Christian friends, the non-Christian way of thinking seeps into our minds. And basically, the non-Christian, the Gentile way of thinking is based on a premise that works like this. Listen, folks, heaven is empty. In fact, there is no heaven. There is no God. There certainly is no Jesus sitting at the right hand of the Father who's going to come to judge the living and the dead. Of course not. The heaven is empty. That doesn't exist. Therefore, that means, as I've been saying recently over the past weeks, everything in this world is mine. That means my money that I go out and earn with the sweat of my brow is mine. Correct? Is that true? You all look confounded. I mean, I can tell, if it's true, I can take my pay packet, can't I? Go into my back garden and burn it. It's my money. Belongs to me. I earned it. I can do whatever I like with it. And none of you can judge me as to how I want to spend my money because it's my money. That is the basis of capitalism. Capitalism basically says the money that you earn is yours. I was preaching this at Toft this morning and somebody said to me, you should go tell the Inland Revenue that the money that you earn is, apparently he's having a big ding-dong with the Inland Revenue. They're trying to claim that his money is theirs. Anyway, but capitalism basically says that your money is yours. Now, communism, as you know, is the opposite of capitalism. And communism says something slightly different, but basically the premise of communism is identical to capitalism. Communism basically says, look, the money that you earn belongs to the state. It's not yours. So the state has a huge claim on your labor. Now notice, both capitalism and both communism, both radical secular capitalism and radical secular communism, both assume that God is out of the picture. Whatever the money is, it either belongs to the state or it's yours. But it certainly doesn't belong to God. Now that's precisely what Paul is saying. That's how people think. But you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Don't think like that. That is a futile way of thinking, not a fruitful way of thinking. That's futile because you've got to understand that everything that you own belongs to God. Everything. The shirt on your back. The car that you drive. The shoes that you wear. Everything. The curtains in your house. The carpets on the floor. Everything belongs to God. Phew. That's hard. Really? Psalm 24. Yours, Lord, is the greatness. Oh, sorry. Psalm 24. Let me look it up. The earth is the Lord and the fullness thereof, the world and those who dwell therein, for he has founded it upon the seas and established it upon the rivers. Did you get that? The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. Now, we recognize that when people come forward for the communion service. I often say, yours, Lord, is the greatness, the power, the glory, the splendor, the majesty. For everything, for all things come from you, and of your own do we give you. Paul has been arguing in Ephesians chapter 1, where he's doing the heavy theology bit. He's now been saying, but now Christ has been raised and seated at the right hand of God, and therefore God the Father has now put everything under Christ's feet. So everything in this world now belongs to Jesus. Jesus claims this whole world. Now, I speak to myself, I speak to you. If you are acting, or if you are thinking that the money that you own is yours, you are stealing. Just put it out there. You're stealing. You're stealing from God. It's his. So if that's true, now Paul is saying, let's live out our lives according to the truth. If it's true that everything in the world, everything that you have belongs to God, what should you do with that money? Point number two, you should give it. Give it away. Now, profound silence has settled upon the congregation. Because I bet some of you are thinking, oh my word. Are you telling me now, are you seriously telling me that I can't go on holiday anymore? Are you seriously telling me that I can't have nice clothes? Are you seriously telling me that I can't drive a nice car? Is that what you're saying to me? If everything belongs to God, does that mean I've got to go on a water and bread diet for the rest of my life? Now, Some Christians have done that, by the way. Some Christians have taken a vow of poverty and they live with nothing and they live on bread and water. So if you want to do that, don't let me stop you. But I don't think that's what Paul is driving at here. You say to me, prove it. I need this desperately to be proved to me. Okay. It's very interesting. After Paul says, do not steal, he starts to talk about work, doesn't he? He says, do not steal, but rather you must work doing something useful with your hands. Why? So that you can give away. Now, let's just pause here, just unpack Paul's thought here. Remember who Paul is. He's a rabbi. He was taught under the feet of Gamaliel in Jerusalem. So when Paul is thinking about work, when he's thinking about stealing, what would his mind go back to? Where did the first theft take place? The first act of stealing in the Bible takes place in the Garden of Eden, where Adam and Eve reach out in defiance and rebellion to take hold of something that did not belong to them. So that's what Paul's thinking about. That's why he also starts talking about work. Because remember what God did in the very beginning. He created the whole world. He created everything, and God says, I've given you, to Adam and Eve, every herb that yields seed, and every tree whose fruit yields seed, and to every beast of the earth, and to everything that creeps on the ground, I have given to you. Now notice this. This is incredible balance, and it's what we've got to keep in mind. Yes, God owns the whole world. He created it. It's His. But in the Garden of Eden, what God did is He made men and women His vice regents on earth. And we are now the chief stewards of all the creation. So what that means is that God has given the whole of His creation into our hands. He said, there it is. It's yours. You can now take hold of the earth. You can now develop it. You can now unleash its potential. You can take the herb-bearing plants. You can take the animals. You can forge this whole creation. You can bring it from one degree of glory to another because it is yours. I have given it to you. Friends of mine, not many, but I've got one or two quite wealthy friends. They've got such things as stockbrokers. Do you know, heard of a stockbroker? I've read about them, and my friends sometimes tell me about them. I think it works like this. If you've got a stockbroker, what that means is they're very clever people. They live in the city of London. And let's say you've got £100,000. Maths is my strong suit, so I'm keeping the figures round. So let's say you've got £100,000. You go to your stockbroker and you say to him, listen, here's £100,000. I want you to invest it for me. Now, these guys, you know, they're in the computers and they're watching the markets. And they've taken your money and they invest it for you. Fair enough. What's the catch? The catch is, I'm not sure how much they take, but they can take a certain percentage. They can take 1%, 2%. Now, if they're doing that for 300 people, they're making a good living. That's fine. I've got nothing against that. They're clever people. They deserve to be paid. But the idea is, you give them the £100,000, and they take 2% for them, and the rest they invest for you. It's your money after all. Look what God's done. God basically says to you and says to me, here, have the world. Have, if you like, the £100,000. You can keep, listen to this, you can keep for yourself £90,000. I only want a return on £10,000. Can you imagine if you're a stockbroker and somebody came to you and said, I've got £100,000, £90,000 for you to keep, do whatever you like. 10% is for me, just invest it for me and return it to me. You would fall out of your chair with that generosity. And you see, my friends, that is basically what God is saying to us. Here, I've given you £100,000. £90,000 is for you. You can keep it. If you want to go on holiday and drink Chateau Neuf de Pape every day and eat steaks, that's fine. I'm basically looking at 10%. Is God stingy? I don't think you'll find anyone more generous than that. Therefore, Paul says, let him who steals, steals no more. Stop stealing. What you're doing with that 10%, now I know. Some people say, and you know, it's true, 10% is too much for me. Well, it might be. For some of you, 10% is not enough. And I remember talking to Chris when he was talking about his parishioners. You know, proportionally, at St. Peter's Rock Ferry, they're much more generous than we are. And I was scratching my head, why is that? Why is that? And I think, I don't know, people have analyzed this and come up with all sorts of reasons. This is what I've come up with. This is what I think. When you're dirt poor, keeping an extra quid or two for yourself, I mean, it's such a little, it's not going to make any difference. And also, you haven't developed a taste for wealth. You haven't developed a sense of its power, what it can do. But if you've got 2 million, boy, £200,000, I could buy another house in France. And so it's harder to give. Now Paul says, now come on, friends. Don't steal. Be generous. 10%, ballpark figure. Go look at your giving. I should talk about Jesus. This is a Christian church. We're not Unitarians. We're Christians. So we believe in Jesus. And I remember Roy Hatchley saying, you know, that's not going to move my heart. So I've got 3 minutes to try and move your heart. Jesus was phenomenally wealthy. He owned the whole world. And he came down into this world and gave it all away. Do you know, when he was crucified, every single piece of clothing was removed from him. He died naked. He did not have one shred, one rag left on his body. Why did Jesus do that? We took it from him. We stole from him. But Jesus did that. He became poor so that you might become rich. Now, is Jesus asking everything back? No. No. He's saying, think about 10% and stop stealing. Do not be like the Gentiles who think in the futility of their thinking. Be fruitful in your thinking and base it on the truth and on the reality that Jesus gave everything for you. I hope I haven't been too hard. But, you know, I think what Paul says needs some serious thought. Amen.